You are listening to a digitally remastered class of Rav Yochanan Zweig, Rosh HaYeshiva of the Talmudic University of Florida. This class is from the Robert L. and Rhoda Lipton Foundation Audio Library. For more information, please call 305-534-7050 or 1-888-TALMUDIC. That's 1-888-TALMUDIC. Or you can visit our website at www.talmudicu.edu.
A very good, I think, understanding of what Yiddishkeit is all about. Let's take a look at page 15. We're going to do some careful text analysis. You need a chumash for this. Pass one. Sentence, chapter 1, sentence, chapter 3, sentence 1 on page 15. And these are the descendants of Aaron and Moshe. On the day that Hashem spoke to Moshe at Mount Sinai. Let's take a look at Rashi. Let's do one more sentence. And these are the names of the sons of Aaron. The firstborn was Nadav, then Avihu, Eleazar, and Isamar. So the Torah started off. Sentence one, these are the descendants of Aaron and Moshe. And the Torah then enumerates their names are Nadav, Avihu, Eleazar, and Isamar, the four sons of Aaron, which means the sons of Moshe are not mentioned. These are the descendants of Moshe and Aaron, and then lists the four sons of Aaron. So take a look at Rashi. It's Rashi's question. These are the offspring of Aaron and Moses, and it only mentions the sons of Aaron. It mentions none but the sons of Aaron. And yet they are called, it says, the descendants of Moshe, the offspring of Moshe. Why? Because he taught them Torah. Moshe taught the sons of Aaron Torah, and therefore they're called his sons. This teaches us, you know, the text teaches us, because the text calls them sons, teaches us. Whoever teaches his friend's son Torah, it is considered as if he had fathered him. Because the Torah calls, these are the descendants, the sons of Moses, and only lists the sons of Aaron, to teach us that whoever teaches his sons, his friend's son, not his son Torah, it's as if he's the father too. The teacher is also the father. Okay. Very interesting.
Did he teach them separately from
the father? Well, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that. That's what it says. I want to read the next Rashi. On the day Hashem spoke to Moses, that's what the sentence said. These are the descendants of Aaron and Moshe on the day Hashem spoke to Moshe. Rashi. These sons of Aaron became Moses' children because he taught them what he had learned from the Almighty, from the mouth of the Almighty. Does that Rashi seem a little redundant to somebody? Is that for the weaker students? Rashi rewrote it. What does the second Rashi say one word more than the first Rashi? We're learning a very serious commentator on the Torah. The first sentence is what? These are the sons of Moshe, even though only Aaron's. It teaches us a Talmudic principle. Whoever teaches his son and another Jew Torah, it's as if he gave birth to him, as if he's the father of him. Right? Okay, it says it clear. Next one. These are his children because he taught them what he heard from the Almighty. What does it mean? He said that already. Rashi doesn't repeat what he just said. What is lacking in the first thing that, and if there is, it was the day they were taught, so add those words. He repeats the whole thing he just said. It's unbelievable. Then we have Ricky's question, which is a very compelling question. I guess there weren't 3 million Jews at Har Sinai. It must have just been Aaron and his four sons. What's that mean? Just the four sons of Aaron were over there. Every Jew is that. And all of a sudden, they said, oh, these are the children of Moses. A list of 600,000 people followed. What's going on over here? Every Jew learned Torah at Har Sinai. I heard from Moses. What is going on here? What is Rashi saying? There's actually three questions. First of all, what does it mean if you teach someone else's, if you teach someone Torah just like you gave birth to them? What does that mean? You know, this Torah doesn't give us exaggerations. Gave him a parnasa, you made him smarter. Gave a person a way of living. I mean, that's give birth. I teach a person a parnasa trade. It's also I gave birth to her. Is that unique to Torah? Secondly, why is it only the four sons of Aaron? And why is what the need for Rashi to repeat it? There's three very compelling questions. A, what does it mean? Secondly, why is it repeated? And what's the difference between the four sons of Aaron and everybody else?
Why isn't there a fourth question, which is, where were the biological sons of Moses?
Yeah, that's another problem. But notice the Torah here is highlighting a certain aspect here, right? The Torah is highlighting something here, right? And which needs to understand, why is this being highlighted here? It's being highlighted one thing, the message of teaching somebody Torah as if he gave birth to
them.
That's why they're not in this list.
They were not there.
Right. Well, it wasn't mean they weren't in Mount Sinai. That's not impossible.
No,
now let's turn to a Rashi at the end of next week's Parsha. Very difficult sentence here. The last sentence on page 84. And when Moshe came to the tabernacle to speak with him, with the Almighty, he heard the voice communicating with him from on top of the kaporis. The kaporis was the golden cover of the, on top of the ark, which had on it an image of two children, which was on top of the ark. Between this image of the two children, God spoke. He spoke to him. Again, when the Torah is describing what was the place of Moshe hearing prophecy. So when he came to the tabernacle, he heard the voice speaking to him from on top. The voice came from on top of the ark. Between these two images of angels or young children, on top of the golden cover of the ark. Let's go to Rashi. He heard the voice. I'm sorry, not that Rashi. The last Rashi. There's a lot to talk about here. This is the last Rashi. Communicating. Midaber. This has the same meaning as Misdaber, literally speaking with himself. If you go back to the sentence, it says he heard the voice. It should say speaking to him. Literally, what Rashi says that means is he heard the voice speaking with himself. It means he heard what? God talking to himself. That's the way it's literally read. He heard God speaking to himself. Rashi says because it is the honor of the Almighty to speak this way, that he communicates to himself, and Moshe would hear on his own without being addressed directly. See what Rashi says? The way the sentence reads, it doesn't say God spoke to Moses, it said Moses overheard God speaking to himself. Why? Because it's more respectful to the Almighty that he didn't address a mere mortal. Let me ask you a question. First of all, 99.9 times in the Torah it says, Vayadaber Hashem El Moshe Lemor. God spoke to Moses. The one time, why? They tell you it's really not respectful, which also is incredible. But more than that, you think it's a great... When I see a guy talking to himself, what do I think? He's nuts. This is respect for the Almighty. He talks to himself. I mean, he maybe wants some intelligent conversation, but he's talking to himself. You know, now, I used to think there's a lot of crazy people. Now I realize they're just on cell phones. Everybody talks to themselves today. You walk down the street, a guy has a Bluetooth in his ear, everybody's talking to themselves. When I grew up, when you talk to yourself, you were nuts. What is going on here? The Torah depicts, first of all, 99.9% of the time, God says he spoke to Moses directly. And over here, it says he's talking to himself. If it's not respectful, it shouldn't be 99. It should say every time, Vayidaber, Midaber Hashem El Moshe, not Vayidaber, which clearly means he spoke to him. So why the discrepancy? And secondly, what is really the great respect for the Almighty? He's saying he's talking to himself. Torah is telling us here, I think, a fascinating thing. Literally a fascinating thing. The Torah is telling us Moses heard God learning with himself. He was observing God learning. 99.9 times in the Torah it says God spoke to him, addressed him. There's nothing disrespectful. We'll say what Rashi really means here. Here it's saying God was talking to himself. What does it mean? As you walk up to a yeshiva and you hear a person learning. So the process of learning is not just saying the words. That's not talking to yourself. That's just reading out loud. What would be talking to yourself? When do you talk to yourself when you're studying? And when do you just read out loud? Reading out loud and talking to yourself is not the same thing. I can read something. I say, Ashrei. I'm not talking to myself. I'm reading out loud. What does talking to myself mean? I'm thinking out some of the questions out loud. I'm going through an issue. Like you're thinking about how you're going to make your payments, how you're going to run your business. You start talking out loud. That's a possibility. That's a possibility. It's a you're watching a thought process. Reading out loud is not a thought process. Reading out loud is just reading out loud. You know, maybe it's a higher experience. You get more involved. It's more. But when speaking to oneself has nothing to do with reading out loud. Speaking with oneself means you're going through some process of analysis here. What it's saying is Moshe had the privilege of hearing God analyze the Torah himself, going through the thought process. Torah is an infinite wisdom, which has an enormous amount of questions, answers. We know how the Talmud analyzes. The whole Talmudic experience of learning is question and answer. A question, a challenge, a contradiction. God is listening Moshe has the privilege of overhearing God learning with himself. Learning out loud, as opposed to just reading the words out loud. Which means what the Torah is telling us, that this is what Rashi means. When God had a message for Moshe, he told him, Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe lemer. God spoke to Moshe. He gave him a message. But learning has one aspect of delivering a finite message, a direct message, do this, maybe even with an explanation. And sometimes there's a whole process of analysis of Torah, which has nothing to do with, that's not just a rendition of information out loud. That is an analytical process. The infinity of Torah doesn't deal with the finite message, the finite amount of information in the Torah. That's not infinite, that's a finite amount. There's a certain amount of words, and you can say those words out loud, you can say that. That's finite. When we think about Torah as an infinite thing, is what Jews spend for thousands of years, our most brilliant minds, and what every Jew is required as much as possible to study, is not just to get through the finite amount of information, because you're smart, you do it sooner, you have a good memory, you review it, and in a few years, you master it. We're talking about the thought process, the analysis. The learning Torah is an analytical process that expands the mind, that challenges, that each day you learn, you come up with new insights through contradiction, through different type of critical thinking. That is the process. When God had a message for Moshe, God spoke to Moshe direct. When God was not giving Moshe a direct message, but was trying to teach him how the Torah has to be learned and analyzed, then Moshe had the privilege of overhearing God learn with himself. See, that was more respectful than God sat down with Moshe and they were learning b'chavrusa. That would have been another way of saying that. But a more sophisticated, more respectful way is not that God sat down and learned b'chavrusa with Moshe. Moshe had the privilege of hearing God learning with himself. And by the way, that process is not someone crazy. When you're analyzing, you're sitting and you're studying over a text, whether it's medicine or law, you'll think about it out loud. I said this and that, and I want to make some reconciliation. That's a process of analysis. Just saying finite information to myself is crazy. I already know, what am I saying it to myself again? But analyzing things, having questions, contradictions, trying to get a new perspective on an idea, a new approach to a new solution to a problem, that a person will think out loud. What's saying is there's two forms of communication. There's one form of Torah teaching. One form of Torah teaching was giving a finite amount of information. The other one was teaching the method of thought, the method of analysis. In the words of the text, or the words of the Torah, one is called Torah Shebiksav, the written Torah, and Torah Shebal Peh, and its oral explanation. For example, it says, Hashem taught Moshe, you should take a beautiful fruit. He told him that means, by the way, an esrog. But that's just giving over information. Then there's Gemara. Gemara is that study of the how to analyze the Torah. That's the infinite part of study. The first part is finite. The written Torah is it's five books. You do that in some courses, in some three-credit course, you got to go through more than five books. You got to go through 50 to 100 times, so you take the course three times. But that's not a lifetime study. The oral law expands some of the explanations to three times the size. When we talk about the infinity of Torah is the analytical process. Torah has it's God's infinite wisdom, that the more that's delved into, the more that's seen, the more it's understood, the more principles that come out, the more applications come out. That's infinite. Every time you learn it, you see something different. There's two communications from Sinai. Which part? So now we've reconciled the Rashis. 99.9 times in the Torah says, Vayedaber Hashem o Moshe, he had a specific message for him, and to give that message over to the Jewish people. But there's another message. There's a message how to analyze Torah. By the way, the Talmud tells us in the Dorm that process of analysis was given to Moshe. Moshe himself. Moshe on his own gave it over eventually to the Jewish people. But that was actually a gift to Moshe. That was not at the day of Sinai. That was not a gift to the entire Jewish people. That God gave Moshe the message that has to be delivered to the Jewish people is the written law and the oral law. But Gemara was given to Moshe alone to be able to give it over to leaders of different generations, or in each generation to have a group of scholars that would Moshe decided on his own to give that to the entire Jewish people. That's called Tov Ayin Hu Yevarech. That was, he had a good eye. He didn't want to be that there would be a community of scholars are the ones that do analysis of Torah and the rest of us don't. And therefore Moshe gave it to the entire Jewish people. That's the history of this. Now we understand the end of that in Parshas Noso. Let's go back now to the Parsha here. But before I start, let me ask, what part do you think when you say when you teach somebody, it's like giving birth to him? First of all, giving birth is that when a person comes into existence, at the moment of birth? A person doesn't come into experience, he comes into existence at the moment of conception. When you say it's like giving birth, you're talking about when you make a person independent. There's a sense of giving independence. Birth experiences independence. It's not just that I created you. It's what I did. I gave you the ability to be an independent entity, to be your own person. And for a person to be in fact, by the way, in my mind, that's the whole trauma of being born. There's no greater trauma in life than being born. Your mother traumatized you, and she traumatized, everyone's mother traumatized them. She took us out of a secure womb and threw us into a cold world where we have to survive on our own instead of taking care of us in a warm, loving, nurturing, growing environment. Her womb, she threw us all out. And while they're telling him, discuss why I think that's the source of all psychological issues with parents. Very fascinating discussion, which I think Rashi says maybe doing. No, I'm not going to be here that Shabbos. But anyway, we'll have some time to discuss that. It's a fascinating thing. But one thing for sure, the moment of birth is not the moment of coming into existence. That's the moment of independent existence. Independent existence means I need the ability to think for myself, to understand things in my way, to internalize a value, to get a perspective on. That requires my own analytical processing of something, my own internalization of an idea. If when I give you over information, or you give me information, and all I do is follow that information, I am behaving. But that's not independence. Independence means I am thinking for myself, I'm forging out my own character, I'm developing myself, I'm becoming a person, I'm becoming a unique person. Each person's own perspective on something is what makes them unique. What the Torah is telling us here, it's not that if you give over a person information, you gave birth to that person. The teacher taught me geometry, didn't give birth to me. The teacher taught me history, didn't give birth to me. Any new information, or the person who gave me a parnassi, taught me a trade, he taught me how to be a blacksmith, didn't give birth to me. He gave me a valuable tool that now I know how to survive. But independence is when he actually taught me how to think, when he actually gave me my own perspective, so that I'm not just following a normal human behavior, I'm actually doing things that I understand, that I feel comfortable doing, that I have my own way of doing. That is the part of Torah. If you taught a person how to think, how to analyze, you taught them critical thinking, you taught them the Torah's values and how to examine this to find more values, to get a deeper understanding. Whoever teaches somebody Torah as if he gave birth to him, it's not the one that gave over information. It's the one who gave a person a value system. You know, probably the biggest difference between the Torah way of doing things and the secular way, and there's a huge downside to this too, and you'll see, I think we all know that, but there's certainly a tremendous advantage. In the secular world, we have manners. People have good manners. You know, I'm not talking about, you know, table manners. English was a culture of manners. How you act in public, how you act in private. There's a lifestyle, manners. In Hebrew, we don't use the word manners. We use the word midos. Midos means character. Character and manners are not synonymous. Manner is a way of behaving. Character is who you are, what you've become. I guess in English would be the difference between etiquette and ethics. I don't know if there's in the Greek, any connection between the two. Etiquette is how you act. Ethics is what your value system is. The Torah is involved in creating a value system for a person. It's not treating a person how to act. It's giving them a value system. The only way a person can get a value system is where he understands, analyzes, and internalizes why he should act a certain way. Then it develops his character, and he has a value system. Then he has really an ethical values. It's not about how ethics is not a way so I know what the proper manners are. Manners are totally superficial. It's a form of behavior, and it's very interesting. You'll usually find goyim with a lot better manners than Jews. Jews aren't into manners at all. So the Jews that have some sense of Torah have ethics, which generates a higher level of manners. But a Jew that's not into Torah has terrible manners, ill-mannered. I think, by the way, that seems to resonate with everybody here. Why do we think that way? Is it we're worse than anybody else? It comes from a tremendous virtue of the Jew. The Jew doesn't want to just be a monkey, a trained monkey. Manners is trained monkey. That's all it is. Whether you're trained by society, you're a monkey, but you're trained. You come from a monkey and you act like a monkey, except that there's how monkeys have to act. The Torah wants you to understand, have develop a sensitivity, and therefore we have a whole system of Torah. That's to develop our moral character, to develop our ethical values. But if I go away from that, I got no manners, because that part of the Jewish tradition I'm very strong in. No manners. I'm very insistent. I don't care about double parking, blocking traffic, and it's my thing. I own this place. Because we have no education from the home in manners. Your parents, as parents, we don't teach our children manners. We don't want to teach them manners. We want to teach them character. So if they take the character, fine. If not, they're the most ill-mannered people. Jews are very ill-mannered. It's the truth. A Jew that's a Ben Torah and has Torah values and buys into it, he has Torah manners. Yeah, some of the Jews are all ill-mannered. They became goyim, so of course they've developed manners too. The totally secular Jew has manners because he's a goy. He acts like a goy. He has the system of a goy. A Jew, a religious Jew, doesn't believe in manners. And we don't believe in manners as a people. Except we believe in a higher standard of manners, that you should actually know what you're doing and you shouldn't be polite like with the Arabs, and you walk out, they're ready to stab you in the back and, oh yeah, please, you have to have a cup of coffee, you can't come into my house without a cup of coffee. And you go out, they don't mind throwing a knife in your back. That's manners. We hate manners because it's false. It has no basis of, there's nothing human about it. It's just a way of trained behavior. The problem is, if we don't take the values and the character, we have nothing. We have no manners and no character. Which is, unfortunately, a lot of times we fall into that trap. Manners is necessary, the whole process of the analysis of Torah. Without the analysis of Torah, it's just a system like any other system that has rules of behavior. It's a rule of behavior. Torah is not rules of behavior. It's to develop a deep sensitivity for the value, a deep understanding of the value, and what I do should the value should flow from who I really have become. For that, you can't just have a book of rules. You have to need a book that has an infinite applications, infinite wisdom, infinite understanding, and then you begin understanding what you're doing and who you are. And when you do that, then kindness is not a little charity, a little charitable alms for the poor, a few pennies for the poor. There's a sense of caring and concern. That's what the Torah teaches us. You can't teach a person unless you study tzedakah. If you just open up the Shulchan Aruch on tzedakah, it tells you, do this, do that. How much you have to give, just like income tax. You know, there's a 1040 form, there's a halacha tzedakah. That's not what Torah is about. Torah is about learning the laws of tzedakah, analyzing, learning the Talmud, learning the questions, the answers, the analysis, so you become a charitable person. That's what Torah is. What the Torah is saying, teaching a person rules is not your child. Teaching a person the ability to analyze and to think, that is already making him, giving him independence. That's like your child. Now let's go back, I think it's page 15. And these are the names of the sons of Aaron. Nadav, Ravi, Elazar, Rashi. These are the offspring. It only says the sons of Aaron, and they are called, told us, Moshe, to teach us that whoever teaches his son, his friend's son, now there's another Jew, Torah, it's as if he had given birth to him. So we're saying that, which type of teaching do you need? Analytical. The analytical, you have to give him Gemara. Now look at the next Rashi. Look how Rashi says every word I say, you have to hear it. These sons of Aaron became his offspring. He already said that. He taught them, now look what Rashi said, he taught them what he had learned from the Almighty. What should Rashi have said? He taught them what he had heard from the Almighty. He taught them what the Almighty taught him, not what he had learned from the Almighty. This is talking about he taught them, the Almighty taught. But Moses learned, which that being taught and being learned is two totally different. Learning means I actually have internalized, I understand. That's going on the analytical process. That's what he gave over. And apparently, Talmud says, eventually gave it to the entire Jewish people. But apparently on the day he received the analytical portion, which was only given to him, to give to the leaders, who else did he give it to? the four sons of Aaron. Only the four sons of Aaron. On that day, only the four sons of Aaron got that. And by the way, now let's go back and I'll show you where the whole thing is in the sentence. Sentence one. These are the descendants of Aaron and Moshe. On the day, Biyom Diber, Hashem spoke Es Moshe. How do you say Hashem spoke to Moshe? The day Hashem spoke El. What is Es Moshe? He actually translates it right here in the English. On the day Hashem spoke with Moses. He spoke to Moses. What does it mean with Moses?
Moses spoke to him. Two-way conversation.
No, I don't think. Well, it could be that. It means on the day he was with Moses. That means Moses was overhearing God studying. The day he was speaking with Moses. Now, with means he's actually learning, God is learning out loud, and he's with Moshe. Moshe's hearing. So it's, in a way, it's saying he wasn't speaking to Moshe, he was speaking to himself with Moshe there. Which is what part of Torah is that? That's the part of the analytical. That's what's bothering Rashi in the text. Everything I'm saying is just serious reading of Rashi. All of a sudden, Rashi gets at the whole rendition over here. Where in the sentence is there any indication? Rashi's bothering. What do you mean? On the day that God spoke to Moses with Moshe. With Moshe means with Moshe's being there when God was learning with himself. It's a respectful way, again, of saying God was learning with himself. It means we're not going on the finite message that God was delivering to Moshe, but what are we going on? We're going on listening to, going through the thought process that Moshe then absorbed this, and therefore he got a handle of how to develop understanding, which would then develop real character as opposed to behavior. And who else did he give that over to? He gave it over to the four sons. On that day, he only gave it to the four sons of Aaron, which means the Torah is giving us here a whole insight on what the whole learning experience is. There's a whole learning experience that's not to come and learn some rules and regulations. Not that you shouldn't learn the rules and regulations. That's a finite part that every Jew has to know. He has to know how to keep Shabbos. He has to know how to pray. He has to know how to put on tefillin. Every Jew has to learn that. And what foods he can eat or not. But that's a finite thing. When we talk about learning, we're not talking about finding enough hours to finish the course in Talmud or the course in Chumash or the course in Shulchan Aruch and the codes. We're talking about learning how to think, learning how to absorb Torah principles, to absorb values. That requires learning, requires questioning, answering, having contradictions, reconciliation of contradictions. That's the way we developed the process of analysis, and the Torah gave us great guidelines, the Oral Torah. And of course, the best teacher is to watch somebody do that, to learn with somebody, like the Chavrusim. You learn with somebody, that's the best way of learning that process. Once you begin to do that, then you actually become a better person. Following normative behavioral Judaism doesn't make you a better person. Maybe you may enjoy life better, you take off Shabbos, you have a stress-free day. I don't say it's not a higher, more enjoyable life, but a higher quality human being, that you really become an independent thinking person who's doing things that they understand are right and finds meaning in what they're doing, that requires learning, serious learning, and understanding the principles. That is the principle of Gemara. That's why we study, and that's an infinite thing that every Jew is obligated to do. And that's really the thing that we pursue all the time. Those who started younger, for the most part, have mastered most of the laws that are applicable today. We're actually obligated to even learn the laws that are not applicable today. Most of us don't do that. But as far as what we need for practicality, a Jew grew up in that, or he is fairly proficient in that. He grew up, and by the time he's 20, 23, 24, he knows. Yeah, a new question comes up. Can you use an escalator on Shabbos? A new question can come up. Or what about these type of things? Are ways of creating Shabbos elevators? There's things that constantly come up. But for the most part, the person knows what to do. But the analysis, the growing, the understanding, that's infinite. That's ad infinitum. And that is the sacred obligation, because that's the way we become independent human beings. That's the way we develop character. I would just like to conclude with one thing. What is the name of the tractate that focuses on character development? Avos. Pirkei Avos. This is the teachings of our fathers. Anybody who studies this has become a son. When you study how character, when they teach us character, they give us the ability to think, they give us the principles to understand and analyze to get character, that's when they become our fathers. It's not called Ethics of the Fathers for nothing. The tractate calls fathers because someone that indulges and involves himself in studying this section of the Talmud almost immediately understands he's become a better person, his character is better, so our teachers have become our fathers. That's why it's called Ethics of the Fathers. Ethics comes from fathers. Ethics is, anybody who teaches you ethics, he's your father. Because he's given you the ability not how to act, but what kind of human being to become. Anyone who teaches you etiquette, he's a teacher. He's not a father. Pirkei Avos is our fathers because they're teaching us values. They're teaching us ethics.
Aaron, he wasn't included in this teaching. Moshe learned the kids before the sons learned.
I hear. I don't know. That's a question. I don't know. We're saying the descendants of Aaron, what I think it must be saying here, is that when Moshe received that, he immediately shared it with Aaron, and they both together taught their children. That's what I think it's saying here. That even Aaron here is not mentioned as the biological father here, but Aaron is mentioned in the same vein. The way the Talmud says they learned was Moshe taught Aaron, and then he taught the children, then Aaron taught his children. So here I think Aaron is not even being mentioned as in his aspect of the biological father, but as the one who actually helped them create his independence, which is a much greater sense of fatherhood. It's not only that he fathered him, but he actually gave him the ability to really forge through life, to navigate through life, because they taught them how to think, they taught them how to develop themselves.
Since God created the Talmud, wrote the Talmud, why did he have to learn?
This is to teach us, and actually God appears in a human way, that he's actually giving us the message that the truths of Torah transcend even him when he has some type of form. Because when God appears with a form, as a king, or some type of form, some type of position, Torah is the truth of all eternity forever. It's his wisdom, but when he appears in a way that we can perceive him, he's letting us know that he's smaller than the Torah. It's to give us an appreciation of the infinite. This is his, God's infinite wisdom. When God appears as a king, we don't perceive him, and we're not relating to him as the master of everything, who's created everything, and nothing exists other than him. We're seeing him in a certain limited perspective. He's our king, sovereign, and therefore, in that perspective, he's letting us know that when we have that limited perspective of him, or we're relating to him in a limited way, the Torah is greater than him too. The Torah is his infinite truth. That's part of the God that we can't know. That's part of the God that can't be limited. That's a totally infinite, unlimited God. It knows God is everything. There was nothing other than God. Nothing. No time, no space. So then he limited himself so that we could have some appreciation of him and have a relationship with him so that we could elevate ourselves and connect to him. Despite the fact that he limited himself, he couldn't limit it, the absolute truths of Torah, have no limitations at all. And therefore, when we see him study, he's letting us know that this is something that's even greater than God in a limited perspective. Anyway, this is a very important message. Now we understand why we don't have manners, but it doesn't mean we shouldn't have character. Everybody have a great Shabbos.